Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from Lighthouse Hockey and the Fans First Sports Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this Sunday morning via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, after a rousing and exciting and incredible start to the week, the Islanders just pissed all over themselves with two completely stupid games that I'm still mad they lost to the goalie tandem of the ages in Michael Hutchinson and Eric Comrie. I mean, it's like, it's unbelievable, right? Like, it's really, really, I don't know what else to say.
The second that game ended on Tuesday night when they beat the Leafs, I told myself, and I think I texted a couple people, like, I am going to enjoy these next few days to relax, because I know that there's a storm coming Friday and Saturday in this back-to-back, because it's, you know, there's really, not to say there's no winning, like if they'd gone 4-for-4, they just took care of business, of course, like, doing that would have been a huge boost, but you know what I mean? Like, it felt like it was all downside. And then on Friday, when you saw that they were going with Michael Hutchinson and Patrick Laine was out, and that the Blue Jackets had let up like 5 or more goals or whatever it was in 7 straight games, it started to just dawn on me, like, how annoying this little two-step was going to be, because both of these teams are, they play similarly, where they're just not good enough to play with the structure that the Islanders play with, or another playoff teams play with, so that the Islanders are kind of used to playing with. They color outside the lines, and as soon as that Blue Jackets game went off the rails, my mind started going to the next night. Not because I was giving up on the Blue Jackets game, but just generally thinking, like, Jesus, it's going to be tough to even get a point out of this game, and the Sabres are going to probably play a similar style, which they didn't. The Islanders, just when teams start coloring outside the lines, it's like they lose their minds. I could not believe they worked so hard to tie that Blue Jackets game up. I could not believe what I was seeing out of Scott Mayfield, and I say this in as someone who's seen Scott Mayfield do so many things, that I'm like, what the heck was he just trying to do there? Yeah. And now he's fishing the puck out of our net. But the game's 4-4. It's a game where you need to make sure you get a point. You need to, because, like, getting out of Columbus with a regulation loss is just a cardinal sin at this time of year. And he pinches after Adam Pellick pinches, probably not a good idea, but he's got Parisi covering for him, and he's got Mayfield. Oh, wait, no, there's Scott Mayfield going to pressure the puck for no reason, gets absolutely walked by Johnny Gaudreau, and there's a 3-on-1 for Columbus, led by Johnny Gaudreau, and Zach Parise is the only man back. And the reason I'm bringing this up before we get to the game itself is because I think that moment was really a microcosm for the weekend. Like,
That structure kind of all over the place, gambling, was not good.
Expecting more out of them, like, they just did not recognize the situation.
Yeah.
At all. And it wasn't, you know, this wasn't Robin Salo or Samuel Bolduc or Arnaud Durando, right? Like, this was Scott Mayfield. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, like, he just flubs the puck and turns it over. Maybe he did that before. I don't know what it was, but he had like a 2-minute stretch where you're just like, this is, you are effectively playing for the Columbus Blue Jackets right now. And that kind of attitude or laissez-faireness and lack of polish kind of spilled into the next night, and it was so frustrating because they had a real chance to put some distance in between them and the Penguins and Panthers, and not only did they squander 3 points, but then they turned me into the exact person I'd never want to be, which was rushing to my car after the game against the Sabres to turn on fucking Don LaGreca or Kenny Albert and Dave Maloney or whoever the hell is the color guy, whatever Maloney guy, and listening and rooting for the Rangers in the rain, in a car, driving home from an Islander game because I need the Rangers to win.
Yeah. Gross.
And the worst part of it, well, there's two, I mean, that itself is the worst part, but I'm listening to this broadcast, and, there's like less than a minute left. There's a faceoff in the Rangers D zone. and Maloney and Kenny Albert are talking about Mika Zibanejad being criminally overlooked as a Selke candidate rather than calling the play. So I'm sitting there like, what is going on? Who just won? That's a very important face off for us. Like, who just won it? Turns out Carter Verhaeghe won it. And they got to that detail a couple of seconds after it happened, I guess. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on. Are the Panthers going to shoot? Like, what? And they're just talking about his Selke credentials. And it was a great kind of encapsulation of the two fan bases, not just in this moment in time, but just generally. It's like all they care about is like getting, you know, the recognition for Mika Zibanejad to win the Selke here. And the Islanders are fighting tooth and nail for any scrap they can to get into the playoffs. So that's what those losses did to me, was like, they turned me into this absolute gremlin listening to the Rangers, and it makes me sick. I'm still thinking about it. And that's not the first time that they've done that, like in the last 10 days. How many times have we had to root for this team? Yeah.
The only thing that kept this weekend from being a total disaster was the fact that the Rangers beat the Panthers. Like, had the Panthers won that game, this weekend would have gone as badly as it possibly could have. Like, you give up, you know, you have four possible points against two bad teams playing out the string. You get one of those 4 points, and then, you know, the other team wins. Now you're in a lot of trouble. So thanks, as gross as it is to say, as disgusting as it feels, thank you to the Rangers for keeping this from being a complete and utter disaster for the Islanders in a weekend where, frankly, they should have. And listen, I get it. We hear this all the time. In fact, the Islanders were this team for many, many years. Oh, they're playing loose out there. They, you know, they have nothing to play for. They're playing for jobs. They're trying to impress the coaching staff. We have all been there, which is why when the Islanders fall into that trap, it drives me completely bonkers, because we know what's happening. And after that Columbus game, by the way, we'll talk about the Leafs game plenty at the second, in the second part of this first half. So we'll get to the good stuff eventually. But after the Columbus game, Kyle Palmieri's like, yeah, you know, we just weren't prepared tonight. Dude, it's game 73. How much research and preparedness and understanding do you need to take on the mighty Columbus Blue Jackets, who are 20 points behind you in the standings? What kind of preparedness is necessary for this game? Maybe I'm just naive to the infrastructure and the nuance of the professional athlete, but are you kidding me right now? We weren't prepared. And then, like you said, they came out against Buffalo and it's the same thing. Like, it was literally that these games would have been, well, the Buffalo game in particular would have been an even bigger disaster had Semyon Varlamov not stood on his head for the first period. Like, the first period was all Sabres and Varlamov was fantastic. Good for him. Like, he's finally, you know, came back and played really, really well. And, you know, and the Islanders do deserve credit for, again, tying the game in the third period in Columbus when they were terrible for basically the first period for sure. Much better in the second, and then they tied it in the third, so they do deserve some credit for that. But Lee takes a bad penalty just before the end of regulation. Of course, they lose in overtime. Apparently, that's Boone Jenner's first ever overtime game-winning goal, which is like, huh? And then, you know, you're facing a goalie the next night at home who got lit up for 10 goals in his previous game, has a sub-9 save percentage, and he walks out with a shutout. Yeah. What are you doing? Like, what is going on right now? And recognizing the situation is 100% right there. Like, how can they not recognize the situation? I don't understand what else there is to you need to know. And you called out Scott Mayfield. I'm going to call out Josh Bailey. Comes into the lineup on Saturday. And it can't be a coincidence that all of a sudden Horvat and Lee are invisible. Like, I hate saying it. I like Bailey. We like Mayfield, but man, it's not a coincidence. It's something these guys, you know, they like you said, they color outside the lines, and all of a sudden the whole thing is off the rails. And it's just, I mean, come on, guys, it's Columbus and Buffalo.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
The Bailey thing is heartbreaking. That's right. The only word I can think of it, because it's, we love him and we love him so much. And
this guy's played 1,000 and what games for this team right now,
and he's got a song and he's had like such a tough kind of career. His career arc has been, I don't know how to put it, interesting.
Yeah,
to go for a lazy word, but and he's the type of guy we want to root for, because he kind of embodies the Islanders ethos of being the butt of so many jokes for so long, and
I mean, if I saw Josh Bailey lift a Stanley Cup, I'd probably burst into tears.
Yeah, like, absolutely. and the decision to play him, I thought was, you could see the logic in it.
Sure.
Like this, okay, here's a veteran player who's been healthy scratch for a while. He's going to come back in and have a fire under him, maybe.
Yeah, back to back.
And I thought Holmstrom's been fine, but obviously that first line has not produced where they should. And it might be the fact that you're playing, you know, Bo Horvat and Anders Lee with either your healthy scratch or the guy who's not healthy scratch, which we talked about last episode, right? Like, this is, that's pretty obvious, but it's the fact that the middle six, like the Palmieri, Nelson, Engvall line continues to probably be their best line by a while, by a country mile. We owe Kyle Clutterbuck an apology. I was pretty tough on him last episode, and he came back with a good week. The fourth line's been fine.
That's how you come back from injury.
Right.
Like a Kyle Clutterbuck.
Yeah. and like the third line with Pageau, Parisi, and Fasching. Like, you know, maybe that's the line you can, you know, juggle with to see if you can spark something out of Horvat and Lee right now. But I get like the decision. Like, I totally got it. Like, this is Josh Bailey, 1,000+ games. He's, you know, going to be a Islander, you know, on all the Islander all-time record lists in points and games played and assists and all that stuff. There's a player here, and he's been healthy scratch. You'd expect him to come out and basically play like it could be like the last game of his career, right, so to speak, right? And he did not, which, like I said, was heartbreaking because that first shift he took, I was like, all right, let's go, Josh. Like, maybe this like a quintessential Bailey game, like we saw when he, after he was healthy scratched, when he was supposed to get his 1,000th game. You know, maybe that like kind of Bailey shows up, and he didn't. And I was at the game, so maybe I'm misremembering, but I'm pretty sure his turnover in the offensive zone ultimately led to the Oposo goal.
It was he had a turnover, and then Lee essentially also just handed the puck to Oposo.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a combination of
Scott Mayfield and Josh Bailey, guys who've been on so many playoff runs with this team. And I'm not just talking about the conference finals run. Like, these guys knew how to sweep the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were in that Capital series together. Like, they know how you're supposed to play this time of year. It should be their de facto setting, and they didn't do it. And they didn't recognize the situation, and they put the Islanders in a precarious spot. And like, I think at the trade deadline, or maybe a couple weeks before, when the Islanders traded for Horvat, I think that's a pretty good line of demarcation. Had you offered us this situation, hey, you're going to be 4 points ahead of the Panthers going down the stretch here with 8 games to go and 9 games to go for them, would you sign up for it? We would have bit your hand off for it. Sure. Like, absolutely. But then you add in, if you offered this to us on Wednesday, you'd be like, I don't know. Like, it's, and that's how the season's gone. Like, at the end of every episode, when we kind of preview the next week, we always say, you know, we should have our answers of like what this team is and where they are by the next time we talk. And then they do exactly the opposite of what you think they're going to do. I would thought they hopefully were going to get 4 out of 6 points from this stretch of 3 games. They got 3 out of 6. So it's like the world's not over. This team is still a favorite to make the playoffs. But now the kind of, the worries come back, the afraids. We've known something about this team forever, which is like, you can always see it coming. We can go back to that trip out west when the Islanders had some momentum, then they lose to Kraken in a terrible effort, and you're just like, oh boy, I think something's coming. And I don't know about if that's what's coming now, but there's potential for it with the way the schedule sets up: Devils, Caps, and then a back to back, I believe, at the end of the week with Hurricanes and Lightning. So, you know, there's potential here for very different outcomes. And I'm back to being scared, and I'm happy that I was able to recognize after that Leafs game, like, just take your deep breath now. Because this thing's far from over. And so many people, I remember hearing on like NHL radio them being like, the Islanders are, they're in the driver's seat. Like, no, we're not. The Islanders, no matter, the Islanders could have their both hands on the steering wheel, foot on the pedal, but they are never in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
And they are not in the driver's seat. And the ride just continues.
I'm impressed that you actually heard about the Islanders, because nobody I had talked to, they were talking about, oh, here come the Panthers. And in fact, yesterday's game, unfortunately, was on ESPN, and it was pretty much a Sabres home game. Like, it was like, the Sabres really need this game to stay in the playoff chase. What are they, 10 points back with, like, 11 games to go? I mean, okay, I guess, mathematically, sure. But, I mean, come on, guys. Like, they just, didn't they lose, like, six games in a row at one point? I mean, I know you got to, like, try and, you know, pump up the tires of the teams that are playing on TV right now, but I think it was a little bit overboard. But,
I'll give Boomer Gordon, like, he's very good at going around the league and like, so that's why I heard it. But you're right. Like, even I remember during the I was listening to the Penguins Stars game, or no, the next morning I was listening to the, like, the morning show on NHL radio when I was driving Isla, and they were sizing up the Penguins Capitals game on Saturday. Like, oh, that's an all time four pointer because you got the Panthers playing on the same night. And the Capitals and Penguins will know exactly what they need to do because the Panthers are playing at 5 o'clock that night. And I'm like, and say it. And they just did it. And that's how it's been this whole time. It's like this playoff race has just been, you know, there's one team that just doesn't get talked about it. Whatever spot they're in doesn't get talked. It's bizarre.
I saw one, I think it was at the Athletic. I'm not sure that it was like how the Panthers got back into the playoff race. It's like, yeah, pretty sure the Islanders did that too. Like, they were out of the outside and then they got back into it. So nobody's writing that story. But one other thing about Bailey, if I'm not mistaken, he was the only Islander without a shot on goal against Buffalo. You know, I'm looking at his stats and it's just that he's just a black hole of nothingness at this point.
He's a liability.
He's a liability and he's just not contributing. Right now he's got 25 points, which is the lowest he's had since his rookie year, which, as we all know, we watched and was not good. He's just not contributing really anything. Like, he's just not doing much. He's somehow a plus four, and his Corsi is only 47.7, which seems like it would be a lot better than you'd think it would be. But he's just not contributing anything. And again, I hate that he's got to sit, but I just don't think you can play him at this point. And again, Holmstrom is not exactly lighting the world on fire. That seat is Matt Barzell's. And of course, if we knew when Barzell was coming back, we might, you know, have a better idea of what to look out for, but we don't. And at this point, I feel like, you know, Engvall, Nelson, and Palmieri have been really good together. In fact, they were very good against the Blue Jackets, so they got to stay together. Fashing, Parisi, and Pageau have been great. Parisi, another goal, by the way, he's reached 20. So congratulations to Sasha Barkov for finally reaching Zach Parise's level yesterday in that game against the Rangers. 20 goals at 38 is just incredible. And Fashing has been really good too. So you can't mess with those lines. And then obviously, you know, Clutterbuck is back. So that fourth line is as it has always been. So it's that one top, you know, top right wing spot that is open. And at this point, I'm sorry, Josh Bailey is just not the guy. You know, Simon Holmstrom's probably not the guy either, but given the choice, maybe that's it. And, you know, I don't know. At this point, is a Durando or a Ruslan Ishkakhov somebody who deserves to come up and try that spot? It's a lot of pressure, and I don't know if they want to. I'm knowing the Islanders, they're not going to want to do that. But at this point, I would play either of those guys over Bailey. I mean, I'm almost at like Andy Andreoff levels now here. Like, you know, at least, you know, Andreoff's going to go into a corner, right? Like, he's going to go into a corner and he might be another Fashing type. Like, just, you know, he just bangs and hits and grabs the puck and tries to keep it as long as possible. And before you know it, he finds himself open. So,
and the team deserves a ton of credit, I think. Like,
yeah,
that they've stayed afloat without Barzell.
For sure.
Like, nobody, that's the other thing. Like, nobody's talking about the Islanders at all. And when they do talk about them, they don't say, like, man, like, this team turned around its season despite Matt Barzell being out.
Before the trade deadline.
Yeah, it's like we're on a month basically now, I believe. Yeah. I think maybe to the day. And nobody's like saying that or giving them credit, and they deserve credit. And I mean, even the Aho injury, like, that's a sneaky kind of injury that's going to affect the team because he does play in a lot of different roles, and he's their best skating defenseman. And he really was playing the best hockey maybe of his career. And then, like, so they deserve credit, but, and But because there's such a obvious hole on their top line, like you said, like whether it's a call up or something, like you need to basically throw everything you can to fix it, because the rest of the team is working just fine. Like, you know, your goaltending will most likely be good every night, and the defense has been steadily improving, and the middle six is good, the fourth line is playing better. So it's just this one thing, and we know that with Holmstrom, it's you know what you're going to get. He's not a liability like Bailey, but he doesn't bring much upside in terms of producing, and then you'd have to break up a line that is working. So the Islanders won't do it, because that's just not in their DNA to say to Ruslan Ishkakov, or however you pronounce his name. Like, dude, you've been playing great down there. We see the videos.
Yeah.
Go give it a shot with Bo Horvat and Anders Lee. it's just not going to happen. So it's to steal a cliche, like the answer has got to be from in the room. But I think we know what the answers aren't.
Yeah.
Right now. Definitely. So
real quick before we move on to the Leafs, on Horvat, his goal slump is, I believe, at 12 games now. And you hear a lot, particularly from up north, about how he's just not doing it for the Islanders out there. There's a great thread. I'm going to put this into the article, and the Twitter account is Stats by Zach. And he talks about how well Horvat has actually been playing. He's been getting chances. He's been getting, you know, shots. He's been getting chances in the house, or, like, you know, the home plate area, whatever. And he's just doing all of these things that can help the Islanders win. The big problem is Bo Horvat is shooting 0% in the last 10 games. Like, you're not going to score goals by shooting 0%. And you know, this is not a guy who's going to do that forever. So he's going through right now. We've seen this. We've been through this with other guys. Jordan Eberle famously did this. Kyle Palmieri has done this. So he's just snake bit right now. But to think that Bo Horvat's not contributing is a little bit ridiculous. He's doing everything he can, but they're just not falling for him. So, you know, a lot of that might have to do with Barzal and, you know, sort of rotating people on the right. I don't know if he and Lee necessarily have any chemistry. They're just there, you know, because they're, you know, kind of in the natural spots. But I'm not too worried about Horvat. He'll come around, and, you know, he's probably liable to, like, open up a hat trick or somebody in some game where you're not expecting it. So I wouldn't worry about him. He's playing well. It just, the goals aren't falling for him. Okay. Let's leave these two bullshit games behind and move on to the best part of the whole week. And I think it's one that we all had a lot of fun with. 7-2 win over Toronto on Tuesday. There was a lot made before the game, obviously, as there always is when the Islanders and Leafs play. And at first it looked like the Leafs were going to kind of run away with it. The Islanders hadn't played that well, but here comes Ilya Sorokin with yet another save of the year candidate. This time another stick save on, I forget who it was. Oh, it was Erik Gustafsson. Of course, the big, one of the big deadline acquisitions for the Leafs just snuck in behind the D and had Sorokin beat dead to rights, but Sorokin got the stick on it. And that seemed to really spark the team. In fact, Cal Clutterbuck was like, yeah, we saw that and realized, you know, we got to get on this. And from that point on, Brock Nelson got hit high up. He got kind of boarded by Nola Chari. Thank God Nelson was back and has looked pretty good in the last couple of games. So I guess it wasn't anything too serious. But from that moment on, after that first period, it was pretty much all Islanders. Parisi scored again. Fashing scored again. Clutterbuck scored the first of his two goals. With a great tip from about, 10 feet in front of the net. It was a very un-Cal Clutterbuck-like goal, but it was great. So then here comes Mitch Marner to make it 3-2, and then he makes this big celebration, and he's pumping his chest like he's King Kong, and like he's, you know, just scored 50-50. And on the very next play, Cal Clutterbuck kind of gets a breakaway a little bit, and there's Marner watching, skating alongside him while he scores the second goal of the game. And Holmstrom had a chip-in goal. Dobson had an empty net goal. And then, as if 6-2 wasn't bad enough, Anders Lee gets a tip-in goal from another Dobson shot. And the party was on. So, yeah, Sorokin made 25 saves, some of them very spectacular, including that stick save. Ilya Samsonov made 22. A lot of those pucks went up over his shoulder. I don't know if that's the book out on him, Doc, but it looked like they were all going in over the shoulder. It was just a great time, and it was a great time. And anytime you can beat the Leafs to death at home during the serenading of the boos and the jeers for one particular Leaf, made for a great night. And I know I was doing it. I know you were doing it. I don't know if anybody else was doing it. made for a lot of fun listening the next day and reading of all the, you know, the Leafs people. None of them really gave the Islanders credit at all. It was more about like, what was wrong with the Leafs? How did that happen? Where is everybody? But it's always fun to watch when that happens, yeah, and they have to kind of reflect on themselves, basically.
I thought it was hilarious when I was doing the rounds on Twitter afterwards. Like, nobody had even like mentioned it. Like, it was like, right, all right, we're just not going to talk about this one.
Yeah.
The Leafs writers or whatever.
A few of them, yeah, decided to take that day. The Athletic, basically, they had their report card thing, and then that was it. They just took the day off. There was no game story. There was no, you know, follow-up, no nothing.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that one, guys. Come on. They lost, and we don't want to do that. We'll instead focus on shin pads and how people wear them or whatever it was. So it was a great day the next day to go around and listen to folks. And there were so many people who were like, you know, they didn't really, the score said 7-2, but I thought they didn't play that bad. And
yeah,
I was like, yeah.
That was on Sportsnet. The lead was like, it wasn't that the Leafs were outclassed by the Islanders. Dude, you lost 7-2. Yeah. You got outclassed. Like,
you lost the Islanders like chewed you up and swallowed you. And the stats might not show it. And yeah, the Leafs were pretty good in that first period, and Sorokin made some big saves, but you're playing the Islanders. Like, Ilya Sorokin plays for the Islanders. They're not playing Dave Riddick. Like, it's not like, oh my God, like, where did that come from?
Right.
Can't believe that, you know, Anton Hudobin just stood on his head like that and stole that game for the Leafs. It was the best goalie in the league played like the best goalie in the league. Like, that's part of the Islanders. That's who they are. And, and then they did what they when they're at their best, they do. They kind of slowly just suck the Leaf spirit away from them. And the best part is you could see it coming. And then the crowd was just incredible that night.
Yeah.
With Tavares. And I didn't realize that was their first game against the Leafs at home this season. And I remember last year, the first time they played the Leafs at UBS, it was tough because it was the COVID.
That was like the shutout.
Paul Ledoux, that was the second game too. So like,
right,
it was like they lost like three players from the first game at UBS when they had nobody, and then they took three more players from them, and so it was just an absolute mess. Where I think Dobson was the only regular defenseman from opening night playing in that game.
That sounds about right. Yeah,
and so like the crowd wasn't, you know, up for it. But this time they were, and I was really happy because I was wondering, like, walking in, like, how the response would be, and the fact that the game was so high stakes definitely helped add to it. And it really reminded me how much I hate this guy. and not yeah. just not just the person and the player, but like the whole baggage that comes with him.
Yeah.
And hearing the JT sucks chant was just hilarious, I thought, because it was so loud and obviously came through on TV. And the Islanders giving out a Spite bobblehead. it's Butch Goring night.
Of course.
And they're showing like a tribute video to Butch, who's at every Islander game because it's his job to be. So there's like a 91 TIFO or like a flag being hoisted up in one of the sections, and they're showing it on TV. And the Leafs bench, of course, is tapping their sticks, like, you know, being good sports. And then they see that and they realize, oh shit, I think I get what's going on here. The Islanders really hit all the notes that night. It was an incredibly well done grudge holding, and that's what it needs to be every time he comes in. I don't care, like, do something like that every time, because he left. Like, he doesn't get a tribute video every time he comes. Like, we can treat him how we want to. And the team really leaning into it was, I thought, a great touch. And the next day there were some, you know, people kind of like talking about, can't believe they still do this, and it's a little petty at this point. Like, no, it's not. Like, if this was any other team and fan base against and any other player, like, you would be like, how great is this? Like, man, can you imagine this being this guy going back? And for the first time, actually, in this whole saga, it kind of dawned on me, because I can't remember who it was on one of the shows, or maybe it was, you know, someone on NHL radio, like, can you imagine being that guy? And like, you're getting booed every time you touch the puck after being there for 9 years. And I never thought of it like this way framed. Like John Tavares, when he was here, worked so hard, like on the ice, like that was his thing. He's a hardworking, blood, sweat and tears kind of player. Sure. Dealt with some injuries, all sorts of stuff.
Well, and then there's all the off the ice stuff too.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Too. So he did all this stuff when he was here and when he was an Islander.
Right.
And then every time he comes back, to have none of that be appreciated. And I'd never thought of it that way. And it made me feel so proud of the way that he was treated on Tuesday night, because I was like, I'm happy that that guy's leaving thinking that, because he is thinking that. He's like, you know, like, man, I shouldn't have worked so hard on the ice and for this team, because look at how I'm being treated. I'm like, I really hope that he feels that. Yeah. It was great. The Leafs were so frustrated. Then, I got to do the victory lap in the podcast, and it was a really strange how quiet it was after the game. There was no talk of, you know, just a meaningless game for the Leafs, all this stuff. And there was one person, it might have been Justin Bourne, who was like, you know, your captain's getting like eviscerated out there. Like you would expect someone to like kind of for the guys to be up for it, but they're not. And
that goes back to every time that the Leafs play here. Like, this has happened every time. And you took the words right out of my mouth. Like, I have this theory. First of all, before I get into this, I just want to say, we had our friend Joe Buono on Weird Islanders last week to talk about his great book, New York Islanders A to Z. And he has his Eyes on Isles podcast with his friend Andy Francis. If you haven't listened to it, you should. It's really good. And, you know, they're the exact opposite of us. Like, they're like, you know, it's enough already. We don't need to do this anymore. We need to let this go. And I had emailed Joe about a few things. And I was like, by the way, I plan on being mad for the rest of my life. So I respectfully disagree with you and Andy. And he was like, no, I totally get that. I totally get that. So there are other people that have moved on. And I appreciate that. That's a very logical and very mature way to feel. Mike and I and a lot of other people, obviously vocal people at the game, feel differently, you know, and I'm with you. Like, I feel like it's funny to me that in 31 other buildings in this league, this guy is just another good player on another good team. Right. But in this one building, this one place, which of course is the place he used to play or would have played if he'd stayed here, he is public enemy number one. And I think it drives him absolutely bonkers. Like, I think it drives him crazy. And I've noticed, and yes, there was definitely a lot of sort of non write-ups of this after the game. But in reading the stuff and listening to stuff that was after the game, I came to this conclusion, and maybe I'm crazy, I don't know. But like, the way I kind of feel is that the Canadian media, the way they write stuff and say stuff, seems to have this idea that John Tavares is their friend, right? He's a nice guy. He's very accommodating with the media. They've probably met him and his family, and he's a very, very nice guy, and they like him personally. And every single time he comes back to play on Long Island, he is scared and nervous, and he wants to cry. And they don't want to say that because they're afraid that it might make the captain of the Mighty Maple Leafs sound like a big old squishy baby. Like, they don't want to say that. And of course, if they do say that, oh man, you know, Tavares really hates playing on the island. It drives him, you know, he gets very angry. You know what that means? We're just going to do it worse, right? Like, that's just like the old right. bully tactic. You know, if you have a brother, an older cousin or a sibling or something like that, that's just always how it is. This bothers you. Okay. Well, now we're going to do it 10 times worse. And I think that's just it. And it just, it comes across in the way they cover him and the way they talk about the team. And I've heard that too. I think Kiprios too was also saying, like, where are the other Leafs? Like, where are the other guys to like stand up for your captain and be like, no, you're not going to treat this guy this way. We're going to play better. You know, not necessarily get into a fight or anything like that, but like, we're not going to just sit here and take it on the chin, which is basically, especially by the end of the game, what the Leafs were doing, just stand up for this guy. It just isn't there. And I think obviously it's because they don't get it. Like, I would like to hear Pierre Engvall's kind of feelings on this now that he's played on kind of both sides, if he's like, you know, it's good. But then, like, you see, I have seen, though, people after this game saying, like, you know, I respect the Islanders fans for still being mad about this. There's one particular tweeter. I'm not going to mention his name. He's just one of the most irritating people on this entire stupid corner of the internet. And I don't even want to give him the air for this. But he was like, you know, I can see how they're mad at him, and I can see why he left. And, you know, I think it's great theater. Well, bully for you. It's great theater. Like, you guys have been calling us trash. Forget about Tavares. People have been up there have been calling Islanders fans trash for decades. And now all of a sudden we have your respect. Man, get lost. We don't need your respect. Just shut up, please.
It's the classic kind of like, oh, I got to be contrarian now because I spent too much time on one side and now I got to.
Well, it's not going away. So yeah, they don't want to, you know, they don't want to be on that side of like, I don't want to get yelled at too. So.
And I'm starting to hear other people say this. So I got to make sure that I got my bases covered. And plus, I'm going to want to boo Austin Matthews if he leaves. So I got to make sure that I can't be a hypocrite. Right.
Well, they didn't boo Johnny Gaudreau. That's the other thing too, is like, you know, all the Flames fan didn't boo. They didn't boo Johnny Gaudreau. Good for them. Like, I don't know what you want me to tell you.
That was the Eric Francis. He said the Flames, like Flames fans know exactly how to do this kind of thing. They know the right playbook, unlike other fan bases. You respect them during the tribute video. You give them standing O, and then anytime he touches the puck, you boo him because he's on the other team. Like, you're in the media, man. You're not a fan. Like, that's there is a fourth wall here. None of these people really understand that. It's kind of like when on 32 Thoughts or any podcast like that, like, you know, if I was a fan, like, this is how I would feel. Like, well, you wouldn't know how to feel because you're not a fan. Your job is to not be a fan. That's there's nothing else to say. Like, and then this whole week on 32 Thoughts or for the Friday episode, Jeff Marek was talking about how he wants these like kind of raucous European style atmospheres at hockey games, and he wants them to come over. Like, they're here at some arenas, one in particular that nobody talks about. Like, the Islanders arenas will get to be very Europeanish.
That's a very bizarre lament when the Islanders are literally right here. We haven't heard the Josh Bailey song that much this season, but it does exist. And
And two nights ago, they just booed the shit out of some guy anytime he touched the puck, and they were chanting at him. And it was very much a European kind of atmosphere that night. And I can't wait. I hope Austin Matthews leaves the Leafs for, you know, a million reasons, but I really hope he does, because when he comes back and he gets booed, I just need to hear.
Yeah.
Well, that's every fan's right, is to do something like that. You know, he left. He could have stayed and been a Leaf, you know, held every Leafs record. Like, so they, of course, they're going to be mad and angry, like every fan would be in that situation. Except for one fan base out there. So Boomer Gordon, he opened his show on Friday morning, Wednesday morning, talking about the atmosphere. And he kind of went into this whole monologue. And if you have the SiriusXM app, it's worth listening to, like, the first few minutes. Because he talks like there's 32 fan bases in the NHL, and we love them all for certain reasons or whatever, but there's one that sticks out. And he's like, and I'm in Stop and Shop listening, and I know exactly where he's going. And he had texted me during the game saying, like, oh, you guys can hold a grudge. And all I responded back to him was, fuck him. So he's talking, he's kind of on the side of Joe and Andy, I guess, where he's like, I can't believe they're still doing it. Like, it's just, to me, it's just bizarre. And I can't kind of wrap his mind around it. And he's like, yeah, and I was texting Liebhoff during the game, and he responded back, and I can't read what he said on radio because it's just like expletive laden. And I was just like, man, these guys. And then he kind of talks about how it is entertaining and stuff to watch, and same kind of thing. But it's just, it's so annoying to be told how to be a fan.
Yeah.
And like you said, if you're over it and you've moved on, and you don't agree with the treating him like that or whatever, that's totally fine. Like, it's very logical, but there's still a huge portion of this fan base that, because of how many times people have walked out on this franchise and have never had the chance to voice that displeasure. Like, we couldn't go boo John Spano in the courtroom, you couldn't do that kind of stuff. You couldn't find Mike Milbury and just go boo him when he went to the store. Like, he doesn't come back. We finally had a chance to let it out at someone.
Yeah.
And it just happened to be the guy that left on, like, maybe almost left us in the worst position of anybody. But luckily, we got out of it. But there was the potential there, and so of course, there is a lot of built up shit there.
And there's
not
also
through with it yet.
No, definitely. And I think that's the other aspect. And I think that this is why Goudreau doesn't get booed and other guys don't get booed. You cannot discount the Toronto factor. Like, you can't discount the fact that he went to this place that he said he didn't want to play for. And it was the place that did the hardest selling on him. Steve Dangle, I'm looking at you. You know, please don't send me pictures of like whatever crazy face he made. I don't want to see it, you know. But like, that was the team that did the hardest sell on him, the hardest press. He didn't want to go there. He said, you know, he wanted to stay and win here. And then, of course, as soon as, you know, free agency opens, 2 minutes later, he's there and he's got the bed sheets. And it is the epicenter of not necessarily the sport, but the sports media hubs and outlets. And that's the thing. Like, if, you know, I feel like Flames fans would be angrier at Johnny Goudreau if he went to go play for the Oilers, right? Or some other team and said he didn't want to play for them. Like, you know, he's going to play in Columbus. And I think that they're just like it's a very weird dynamic. Like, I didn't see this happening. And well, I guess if he wants to play in Columbus, that's fine for him. But like, you don't hear all this stuff coming out of Columbus all the time about how the Flames suck, how they don't deserve a team, how they should be moved to Hamilton, how they, you know, the reason he left is because, you know, they stunk and he couldn't, you know, he wasn't going to win there anyway. And look at all this talent that he can, you know, win and be a hero here and all this. Like, you hear this shit all the time coming out of Toronto about the Islanders. They hated us before Tavares and they definitely hate us more now. And that factor is enormous. Yeah. Like, it's, you know, if Austin Matthews leaves to go play, you know, for Dallas, I don't know if that's really going to, you know, register, you know, if he says, oh, I would never go play in, you know, the United States. I don't need to play there. I'm happy here in Canada. And then he goes to play for Arizona, you know, then I think he's going to get booed. Like, I think that would be a huge thing, but you know, I could see him leaving. I could see him going to play to LA or some, you know, again, Dallas or something like that. But I think, you know, the problem is that we hear out of Toronto so much all the time about how much our team sucks. And then to have our captain leave and go play there is just, that's where the traitorous, you know, the treason comes in, like, for lack of a better word.
And there's no credit given to the underdog in the story. Like,
right,
the roles have never been clearer in sports.
Yeah. Right.
The Islanders are the underdog. Their franchise savior left for nothing to a team to create a quote unquote, like, sort of super team.
But the team that has all the resources, all the money, all the fans, all the media, all the everything. Right.
Yep. So. Yeah. You're the bad guys here, right? Like, you are if I were to just sit down an NFL fan who doesn't watch hockey and I say, who are the bad guys here? Who's the underdog that you would want to root for if these two teams were playing? Who's Cinderella? Mm. They would say, okay, it's the team that the guy left and went to the rich team that, you know, has all the, you know, coverage and everything. And I said, okay, well, this team, the Cinderella team here, so they start winning.
Yeah.
And they do it, you know, not just 1 year. They win, and then they win again, and then they win again, and they get very close to winning a championship. But they are painted like this big, bad pariah in the NHL for somehow. Like, this team that is going about doing this all in the wrong way. Yeah. Like, look at the Islanders, so quintessentially. Like, what is sending us back to the 1830s with the way that they approach hockey?
Somebody needs to legislate this hockey out of the game. It's ruining the sport. It's boring.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And if they can only do it more, if they could have only, you know, if the Leafs could have only got a little lucky against the Lightning or the Blue Jackets or the Canadiens, like, you never know. Like, this Cinderella story finally could have had a happy ending. That's part of it too. Like,
yeah, definitely.
You guys have it all mixed up. You guys are not, you are very unlikable. I think that's about pretty much as I could put it.
There was an article at Pension Plan Puppets a few years ago where one of the writers was like, the Leafs are the bad guys. Like, it took him a while, but they recognized it. And I think it was after the Canadian series where it was like, yeah, we're the bad guys. And they mentioned Tavares too. Like, we just took a team's captain from them. And it was, for us, it was great, but for them, it was heartbreaking. And they've gone on to win, you know, and win some more. So some Leafs fans do recognize it, but it's definitely the majority of them And definitely their media don't. So, okay. Whew. Well, we're going to cool down for a minute and we'll come back and we'll look at this crazy schedule the Islanders have coming up, which is not going to be a picnic either, which is why you don't lose games to Columbus and Buffalo. But we'll get into that in a minute. If you would like to hear bonus content from Mike and I, including our first ever non-hockey podcast called Country Club Atmosphere, or our mailbag podcast, of which we're going to be listening questions again in a couple of weeks, or you want to read Mike's fantastic long-suffering newsletter, or you want to read my Dan's Islanders book club, which is first issue is coming out this week, you are going to need to sign up at our Patreon, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. You get ad-free episodes of the show, plus a ton of bonus content, and it's great. Come on, it's $2 or $5. You won't even miss it, and you get a lot of great stuff. So take a look, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. Sign up today, and we'll meet you on the other side. Thanks. And now a word from the good sponsors. First, as always, VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and jerseys featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. Vintage Ice Hockey also carries our Al Arbor and the Island merch, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. If you spend $50 or more, use the code 4CUPS, that's F-O-U-R-C-U-P-S, to get a free The Island coffee mug or pint glass or an Islanders Anxiety puck. That is VintageIceHockey.com. Use the code 4CUPS, get yourself a free gift. Try wines from the Pinot Project. They offer a rosé, a Pinot Grigio, and a Pinot Noir that was named a 2022 Top 100 Best Buy by Wine Enthusiast Magazine. All of them are delicious, priced at less than $15 a bottle, and are available at your local wine shops and at UBS Arena. Learn more at thepinotproject.com. Please drink responsibly. Okay, so this schedule coming up is not an easy one for the Islanders. This is Sunday. Monday night, they have a game against the New Jersey Devils at home. Then on Wednesday, they are in Washington. That game is on TNT. Why? I have absolutely no idea. I guess somebody thought there would be a playoff spot on the line or something like that. That's unfortunate, but maybe we'll get Brendan. You never know. And then Saturday and Sunday, it's back-to-back, and it's a tough one. It's the Lightning on Saturday and then the Hurricanes on Sunday. That's a 6 o'clock start on Sunday, and it's Palm Sunday. So if you're hanging out with your family, make sure you're home by 6 o'clock so you can watch the Islanders-Hurricanes game. I'll be honest, I will probably miss the Lightning game, because my wife and I want to go see John Wick Chapter 4. So if it comes down to that, I am going to take I'm going to take John Wick over the Islanders potentially losing to the Lightning yet again. This is their toughest week easily in several weeks. You know, usually there was like maybe one or two teams that might have been a problem, but here you've got really four. And I know the Caps are outside looking in, but they have not played like it. In fact, we all remember the Caps put a hurt on the Islanders 5-1 a couple of weeks ago at UBS. So these are all enormous games. We're not yet at the point where, teams like Carolina are going to be, resting anybody. Tampa's been in a little bit of a weird funk lately. I'm sure the recipe for getting out of it is playing the Islanders, and I'm sure they're going to come out firing on all cylinders as they always do. And, the Devils, again, they just clinched a playoff spot. So maybe they're coming off a bit of a high too, much like the Islanders did this week. So I don't know. But as you said a little while ago, this week has a potential to be very, very ruinous for the Islanders this week. And I don't like it one bit. And again, this is why you don't lose to Columbus and Buffalo when they get served up on a platter for you late in the season. But what are you going to do? Now they got to go out and win some of these games.
Yeah, they got to make some hay in a week that feels daunting. That Penguins Capitals game last night where the Penguins were up 3-0, then blew the lead late and it was 3-3, and then the Caps tied it up with 2.5 minutes left, and then Anthony Mantha turned over the puck at the red line with 1.5 minutes left, and Malkin scored and basically ended the Capitals season. So maybe there's a chance that the Caps just are not at the races at all on Wednesday, because that game spills into it. But the thing here is, it's not unfortunate. It's unfortunate to say, because you just want to say as long as the Islanders take care of their business, we don't have anything to worry about. But the Islanders have shown that you can't trust them to do that, and none of the teams have. That's why they're all still fighting for a playoff spot, right? So you look at the Islanders with New Jersey, Washington, Tampa Bay, and Carolina, and you'd say, 5 out of 8 points, I think, is a really good week for them in this situation. 3 out of 8 feels like the bare minimum.
Yeah.
But and then you look at Florida and Pittsburgh, and their schedules are a little strange as well. Like Florida has Ottawa on Monday night in Ottawa. And then they have a back-to-back Toronto, Montreal, and then they close up their week with Columbus. So you look at that, and as an Islander fan, you're like, okay, that's 8 out of 8 points for them, of course. But like in real, like I'm sure the Panthers fans are thinking, like, we need 6 out of 8, and that seems doable. And then the Penguins have the Red Wings, Predators, Bruins, and Flyers in a back-to-back. So I mean, I can't make sense of any of it. Like I was saying to someone last night, I can't figure out what the kind of threshold is here to make the playoffs. Like, what's the cut line? You would usually, right. It's like last year was 100. Everyone got in with 100 points. It's obviously not going to be that because it's mathematically impossible for the Islanders to get to 100 points. It's going to be, I don't know, 92 is like what you need, and that means you need 9 points from 8 games, and for some, and it feels daunting.
Yeah,
like that's the scary thing here. Is like, I think 92 maybe. Because Florida's at, 79 points with 9 games left. So for them to get to 92, they need 6 wins and an overtime loss out of their last 9 games. Like,
yeah.
So they need to go 6-2-1. Like, that's not an easy thing to do. I have no idea. And that's why this whole race has just been so exhausting.
Yeah.
Because the only way to ensure you're not mapping this out like the way I am right now is by winning your games. The Islanders obviously just didn't do that. And this whole season has just been whatever you expect them to do, kind of just prepare for the opposite. So like maybe they beat the Devils. I don't know. Like who the hell knows, but it's just, I have no idea.
It's not even just them.
Yeah,
it's exactly all of these teams. Like, you know, so you just read off the Penguins schedule, which was what, the Red Wings, Nashville,
yeah,
somebody else. So yeah, they have Boston, right?
Detroit, Nashville, and then a back-to-back Saturday, Sunday, Boston and Philly.
So like, you know, they're going to walk into a game against 3 non-playoff teams expecting to win, and they could lose all 3 of them, and then they can, you know, win in overtime against the Bruins or something. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, and then Florida too. I mean, again, we started this show thanking the Rangers for beating the Panthers. Like, the Panthers probably went into that game thinking, this is a huge one for us. We need this. The Islanders are going to, you know, they're at that point, they were, you know, playing Buffalo and coming off a back-to-back themselves. And they didn't secure a win. Like, it's just crazy. And the Rangers kind of struck quickly and that was it. So, you know, even Buffalo, I'm looking at it now, they've got 10 games left and they're right now 7 points behind the Islanders. Again, they're mathematically still alive, but like, you know, they lose another game, they're done. So, you can't trust any of these teams. And I hate that. I hate that feeling. You know, right now the Islanders have the best goal differential of all these teams. They're plus 14. Penguins are minus 1. Panthers are plus 4. And the Sabres are minus 9. So really, theoretically, again, the Islanders should technically be in the driver's seat. But I'm looking at this schedule and I'm like, geez, like I'm just already writing off that Wednesday game between the location, the opponent, and the network. Forget it. The Islanders are never going to win that game. There's no chance that they win on Wednesday on TNT in Washington, period. And when they win, and if they win, I mean, could you blame me for thinking that? Like, when was the last time we saw the Islanders win on national TV? And then, you know, that back-to-back on Saturday, Sunday versus the Hurricanes and Lightning, gosh, that's just like, that's just brutal. It's just a brutal, and again, even if the Lightning are right now slumping, who cares? Like, they're still going to trot Vasilevsky out there probably, right? And if they don't, who's their backup?
It's Brian Elliott.
Gibson, yeah. Oh, so another old guy is going to come in and like.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like you said, as soon as we saw that Michael Hutchinson and Eric Comrie were the starters, you knew exactly how this weekend was going.
I'm so mad. I always get Michael Hutchinson mixed up with Michael Layton, the guy who took the Flyers to the finals that one year. And I was like, what is this guy, 40 years old? And I'm like, oh no, it's Michael Hutchinson. Oh, and so he's only played for 18 teams in the league, you know, but this team just, this is just this kind of year. And again, if we knew Barzal was coming back, and you could be like, oh, you know, he's coming out, he's skating, he's ready. You know, maybe by the time they go on the road trip to Tampa, he's back in the lineup. And, you know, he's going to be raring to go. You might feel a lot better about it. But now it's like, well, geez, I hope Josh Bailey isn't on the top line again, because then it's going to be bad. So,
yeah, that's not easy. Yeah. And they're, like you said, like this is their toughest week in a long time, which kind of adds to the to the fear, because we kind of got used to the way the Islanders' schedule was for basically since Horvat came, when they opened up that week with whereas a Philly and Seattle and whatever.
This might be the first week they've had where they have four games since. Oh yeah, right. Yeah, that was the other four.
Yeah, it's been nice. Seattle. Like and now it's not. And yeah, you kind of you're where their Islanders are lucky to be in the situation where they have both the points in their pocket ahead of Florida and Pittsburgh. They got the tiebreaker over both of them. I think even if Florida ties them with regulation wins, then the second tiebreaker is regulation overtime wins, and the Islanders are like three ahead of them. So they have to be passed. The Penguins, if the Penguins catch the Islanders in regulation wins, which they're five back, it means that they're so far ahead of them, it doesn't matter at that point. So like the Penguins and Panthers have to pass the Islanders to basically beat them. And so like they're in the best spot, but as we keep saying, there's just no way of trying to project this thing out. There's nothing we can do to make ourselves or you, nothing we can say to make you feel better about it, because who knows? Like if there's ways to make yourself sleep easier at night, which is you just say, oh, we have Ilya Sorokin right before you go to bed. And there are ways to make you feel terrible, which is like it's Josh Bailey on the first line or Simon Holmstrom for a team that needs to win games down the stretch here to make the playoffs. So you can go either direction and it's very fair. But just know that at least the other teams, the teams that are chasing them, are not surging at the moment. Like these, you got to hopefully trust the probability that they both have nine games left. If either one of them wins 7 of 9, like we'd be screwed basically. And if either one of them goes 7-2, it puts them at 96 points. Like it would put Pittsburgh at 96 and only put Florida at 93. So even if Florida goes 7-2, the Islanders would just need to win 5 games in all likelihood out of their last 8. So they're in the best spot, but it's just, it doesn't matter with them. None of it matters. It's so annoying. It's just, and every win feels like it really feels like there should be a parade down Hempstead Turnpike and every defeat is a divorce. It's just,
I mean, there have been a couple of days where the Islanders got wins. I mean, those wins against Anaheim and San Jose, if I'm not mistaken, were followed by the Penguins and Panthers also losing. And like, that was a euphoric feeling knowing that, man, I can't believe it broke this way. This is fantastic. This is exactly what we needed. And now it's just right back into, you know, the doldrums again and hoping that it can break that way again for you. So you got to get those breaks. And, you know, again, for the third time, don't lose to Columbus and Buffalo when you have them on the schedule late in the season and they're both out of the playoffs. By the way, I was wrong. The Blue Jackets were 30 points behind the Islanders, not 20, as I said earlier. So, but it's done, and now the Islanders need to look forward and take these. So I hope they're prepared for these four games, because I'd hate to see them go into any of them unprepared. But we'll have to see how that works. That's about it. A couple of notes real quick coming up around the old pod here. Like I said before, we had a great Weird Islanders come out on Friday with our friend Joe Buono. Check out his book, Islanders A to Z. Definitely buy it over at BookBaby. The link is in the article there. And we had a great conversation about Alan Quine, the guy who came out of nowhere to score a couple of huge playoff goals for the Islanders. And it was a great conversation. So check that out. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you can. I never say this. I got to get back into saying this. And we got two last week. So thank you very much to Pacetti Knows Best and Phil Monster for the 5-star reviews. Really appreciate it. Be like those folks. Go leave us a 5-star review. We really appreciate it. And sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Use the code 4CUPS at vintageicehockey.com. Get yourself a free mug or pint glass or puck. And try wines from the Pinot Project while you're at UBS Arena. Our friend Desmond at Through the Island Podcast had another friend of ours, Ryan Rat Martin, from Skates of the Stakes, on as a special guest this week. They called us the Gentlemen Scholars of Islanders Podcast. I thought that was very, very nice of them. I did not Did not expect that, but that's very nice of you guys to say. We really appreciate it. And Ryan has been listening to us since he was in high school, which is just about the worst thing I could think of. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, when I heard that, it was funny. I just like, yeah. Because yeah. I was like, wait, we haven't been. And then you were, and then I remember like that we've been doing this for far too long. Way too long.
And to clarify, Ryan said he was a senior in high school. So it's not like he was a freshman and it was like all four years. It was just the 1 year he was in high school listening to us. And now he's a full grown adult, apparently. So, but that really put things into perspective when you hear, so, oh yeah, I've been listening to you guys since high school. Wait, what? What? I mean, I remember it feels like yesterday we were talking about somebody pouring concrete in the toilets at Nassau Coliseum. So time flies. And then Desmond said, I thanked him online and he said that I project an air of Master Splinter, which is like one of the nicest things anybody's ever said to me. So I appreciate that. The only other person higher on the food chain than Master Splinter would be Optimus Prime. Like that's the only other higher compliment I think you could pay somebody in my world. Cause you know, Optimus Prime, obviously he's the strongest, the smartest, the leader, and everybody was really sad when he died. So I just, that's the hugest compliment, but I'll take Master Splinter any day. I appreciate that. So check out Through the Island, check out Skates of the Stakes, and then check out our other friends, Eyes on Isles, of course, Hockey Night New York with our friend Sean Cuthbert, and Nassau Men Hockey Podcast. John Zella said some nice things about us too, along with James Nichols. So we really appreciate them. Leave everybody 5-star reviews. It's a big Islanders community out there. We're all fans of the same team. Give everybody a 5-star review. Thanks for everybody for listening and your kind words. I said Patreon already, right? Listen, read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Check out Fan First Sports Network too. That's our new network, and it's been great so far. I think that's about it. We're gonna have a mailbag in a couple of weeks. Again, probably are tentatively scheduled to record the mailbag episode the day after the Islanders regular season ends, which is in the middle of April. I will put out the call for questions on the Patreon probably that Monday before that. I want to say April 10th, but I might be wrong. If you want to ask a question and you want to hear the mailbag episode, you got to sign up at the Patreon at the Country Club tier. So go ahead and do that. Patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Michael Leboff, any final thoughts on the week that was and the week coming up? I mean, it's been a lot.
Yeah. I just talk to as many Islander fans as you can, because like nobody knows. Like, don't ask for answers, right? Like, there aren't answers, but talking about it definitely helps and trying to
for sure
figure out how to navigate these choppy waters and just hope for the best. I mean, Monday night is just, that's going to be harrowing knowing that the Panthers are playing at the same time as the Devils, and it'll be nice not to have to root for the Rangers for
That would be good. We also didn't mention that after that Hurricanes game on the 2nd, they do have 3 days off, which is kind of nice.
And I looked at that and I was like, oh, that's nice. And then realized, no, it's not, because it's, you know, that it's coming at the end of a week that could be, you know, harrowing. And I'm sure the other teams play. I mean, you never know. Like, they might have those days off too with the way that the schedule is planned out. Like, but yeah, it's a lot.
I can see them having those days off and then coming out and having a week left to go and being like 5 games behind the Islanders, you know, as, of course.
Yeah. And like I said, it is just like that. It does seem like the Rangers part of this whole saga is over, because like the only relevant games that they have would be against the Sabres and Capitals, but they're both so far behind that they're not relevant anymore. So I'm just thankful that's over. And now we turn our attention to teams like the Senators and the Red Wings and the Predators, and maybe Barry Trotz can do his old Chargers a favor with a win over the Penguins during the midweek and whatever. Like I said, like the Islanders control their own destiny, but if you think that, I got news for you.
Yep. I think that's the best way to phrase it and the best way to end. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with 2 E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Read his work at the Patreon too, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. And we will talk to you again after this insane week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.